$4.83, the cost to impact a child for a year. That is the title of a new book by Jen Tarbell. The topic is data on homeschooling growth. In fact, Don Otis, a publicist, writes, U.S. Census Bureau is reporting households homeschooling their children rose by 11% by September 2020, more than doubling from the 5.4% just 6 months earlier. A stunning development is that black households jumped from 3.3% to a whopping 16.1% rate. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and we're going to talk about the subject of homeschooling right now with the author of that book, Jen Tarbell. Jen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jerry. I appreciate it.
All right. Go ahead and first of all, tell us about your book.
Yeah. So the book is called $4.83, The Cost to Impact the Life of a Child for a Year, Maybe Forever. And we explore the impact of what's called Christ-centered microfinance on kids in developing countries. And we looked at a bunch of different factors of poverty and how poverty impacts kids, one of them being education, hence this conversation about homeschooling. But we talk about how just the importance of a parent in the life of a kid, obviously, when you keep families intact and when you empower parents to change their own life, the kids are the primary benefactor. And so the best way to enhance and improve and to essentially rescue kids from poverty globally is to empower the parent and give them opportunity to create a sustainable life for themselves and for their family. So we talk about how parents plus opportunity equals kids win. And I very much think that that principle applies to homeschooling as well. And I think a lot of families are discovering that or have discovered that over the past year.
Okay, explain exactly what you're talking about when you're talking about $4.83 being applied to some sort of loan that is paid back. It's virtually interest-free, but the bottom line is it is a form of hands-up, but it's a hands-up that gets the people having skin in the game, and so they end up improving their lives and improve the lives of their children as well. So give a specific example of this in the third world, for example.
Yeah, exactly. I love how you said that. So we often talk about how it's a hand up and not a handout. And so the idea is giving out a really small loan to the working poor, maybe $30, $50, $100, and they're able to take that loan and invest it in a business. Maybe they're going to buy a sewing machine to sew school uniforms, or they're going to buy an oven to bake bread, or they're going to buy a cow and sell milk into the marketplace. So what happens is you create these little micro economies where in many cases they didn't exist before. So if you're selling tomatoes and I'm selling bread and someone else is selling milk, I'm going to buy my tomatoes from you. You're going to buy your bread from me. We're both going to buy our milk from this guy over here because we all have to make payments back on our loans. And so we're committed to the success of those in our community. And we each have been empowered to change our own circumstance. So it's essentially this idea of saying to somebody, like, you have everything that it takes to create a life for you and for your family. You're just lacking a little bit of opportunity. And so microfinance is this idea of giving somebody that opportunity, a little bit of a seed investment so they can grow a business and then they make payments back on that loan the same way you or I would make a payment back on a loan here. It's just in a much smaller amount. So the $4.83 idea, we did a lot of different research and worked with partner organizations and got their data and kind of distilled it down into this number that essentially if you divide out the cost of a program for a year with one of the organizations that we worked with, and then divided that number by the average household number based on the UN statistics for in that given year as well. The number came down to $4.83. So the bottom line being, it's very inexpensive to have lasting impact on the life of kids globally.
Now, I understand the overall thrust of what you're saying here. In terms of you don't want people to be dependent, you want people to be empowered on their own terms and so forth. But give a specific concrete example of how this works. You can name another country, whatever, but just give an anecdote here that, one specifically that you know about in some third world country.
Yeah, sure. So I'll tell you the story of Francine, actually, in the Dominican Republic. I spent a lot of time there. And Francine actually was a Haitian immigrant, and Haitian immigrants in the Dominican Republic are often looked down upon and not, they have a harder time, making it in the Dominican Republic. And so she moved over from Haiti to the DR. She came with her husband and three kids. Her husband ends up leaving her. Her fourth child ends up passing away, and she's just in this rock bottom kind of a place with no opportunity, just struggling to be in a new place with obviously a lot of grief and abandonment that's happening in her life. And she has this dream. And in the dream, she attributes it to the Lord, to God. She says, God gave me this dream, and he showed me how to make ice cream. There was ingredients and recipes and amounts and numbers and all these different things. And she kind of tucked this dream away and was like, that's so strange. A period of time goes by, and she learns about an organization called Esperanza in the Dominican Republic. They're a microfinance institution. And she's approached by someone and says, why don't you take out a loan and build a business to help your family? And she's really nervous about this at first, right? She's thinking, can I make payments back? What if I'm not successful? How do I do this? And so she ends up going through the different classes that they offer and becomes, more financially literate, ends up taking out a loan, and that dream comes back to her. And she's like, I'm gonna make an ice cream business. And so she does that, and she buys the ingredients, and she follows the recipe that was in her dream, and she ends up building this really successful business. Essentially, they're what you or I would call popsicles. But she sells popsicles, these ice cream popsicles, to the local community. She's hired on, I think, three different people. She ended up being able to, so they lived in a really poor living situation before. She's able to buy a new home for her family. She's able to pay for her kids to get to school, so they didn't have to walk for miles. She's able to, as I said, improve her home, improve their eating, and she ended up getting into additional businesses as well, doing some rental properties too. So that's just one example of how, a small loan can actually make a really significant difference in the life of an individual.
And just so we have an idea, I mean, obviously the interest rates being charged are so negligible, but without it being a loan as opposed to just a direct gift, then, as again, to use that phrase, she would have no skin in the game, so to speak.
Correct. Yeah. There's a book called Toxic Charity, and Bob Lupton is the author, and he talks about this cycle of dependency. And it starts out kind of with this, you give somebody a gift, and they're excited. They're grateful. They have a sense of gratitude for the gift. And then the second time you give the gift, they have a little bit more of expectation. They're starting to expect that you're going to give them a gift. And then the third time, there's this sense of entitlement, and they're feeling like, I'm owed this gift. And then the fourth time they're dependent. Like they've gone through these steps and they've become dependent on your gift giving. And so to your point, there's something about having skin in the game, having a sense of ownership, having a sense of, belief in the self and taking some risk, that actually creates this unique opportunity for people where otherwise they would be prone to become dependent, on handouts.
Okay, now what does all this have to do with homeschooling?
Yeah, so one of the things that we wrote about in the book was education. I mentioned that before. And so we explored the impact of microfinance on kids' education and this idea of empowering families to get their kids into schooling systems, globally. And so one of the things that we were talking about, even as a team, was just the impact of, when you empower parents to have more say, more involvement in the lives of their kids, the kids flourish. And so it's like that, I think I mentioned before, parents plus opportunity equals kids win. I think that applies to homeschooling as well. And so, you just talked about like the number of, the statistics around the number of kids that are involved in homeschooling nearly doubling. I think what we're seeing is more and more parents are actively getting involved in the education of their kids, and they're feeling empowered and they're feeling motivated because they're recognizing, wow, like I can teach my kids these lessons in a third of the time that it would take them at school. And I feel like they're learning them a lot more effectively. And I actually have say in what they're learning. And oh my gosh, I didn't realize this was the curriculum they're being taught, or so on and so forth. And so you have this situation where the family unit, I believe, is strengthened when you have parents that are more involved and not less involved in their kids' lives and their kids' education. As a result, the kids are going to benefit exponentially from that. I think the same is true, as I said, of what we're seeing overseas, when you have parents that are able to be, the one that's providing for and essentially just making a big impact on their own kids.
Do you think some parents are leery of what their kids are being taught in the public schools today?
Oh, absolutely. And I think a lot of parents aren't really aware. And so I think we have this kind of awakening that's happening too. And so they're overhearing their kids' virtual classes, or they're helping their kids more with their homework because it's all being done at home. And so they're they're realizing, oh, I had no idea that they're being taught this, or that their teachers believe these things, which are totally counter to what I believe and what my family believes and the values I'm trying to teach at home. And so I do think that there's this awakening that's happening, and they're realizing that there's a misalignment in terms of what's systematically being taught at public schools. And they're recognizing that they want their voice to be known, and they want to be the ones that are instructing their kids in accordance with their own worldview and values.
Yeah, in some cases, some of the things being taught are so offensive that, for example, supposedly to fight racism, critical race theory, in reality, teaches and promotes racism. And even some of its most vociferous critics are African Americans.
Yes. Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, there's seeds of discord that are being sown by this curriculum. And I've watched so many videos of different families, you know, getting up to talk to their school boards and to kind of fight for what they want their kids to be learning and don't want them to be learning. And which I think is a beautiful thing. I think, as I said, a lot of parents are waking up to what the reality is of what is happening with a system that's government run in this country.
All right. How do you explain the jump in homeschooling among Black families? I mean, the jump is more significant among Black families, and that's I'm curious about that statistic.
Yeah, you know, I think it probably can be attributed to a number of things, but in a lot of poor income areas specifically, they've had a little, like, not as much access to internet. And so the families have had to, have had to be innovative and have had to figure out alternative paths. And so I think that's one thing in particular. I think, you know, another thing is just, again, having more say in the curriculum that's being taught, and families wanting to be able to influence what their kids are learning, and then also being able to kind of match the child's pace, depending on the makeup of the school and kind of what's being, the level of the students in the classroom. I mean, the teacher has to kind of move at one pace. And so I think that, families are able to kind of look at what my kids' needs are and match the needs of the child versus, being concerned with the needs of the whole group, and it's kind of, what one size fits all, so to speak.
Now, we've seen some pushback against parents speaking out against things like critical race theory, or let's say the, extreme trans agenda or that kind of thing. And then we've seen the union leaders, teachers union leaders, essentially circle the wagon. So how about a comment about the teachers unions?
Yeah, I always say, kind of look at the money, right? I mean, the teachers unions are some of the most powerful in our country, and they are very, very politically motivated, and they have a lot of influence in the political sphere. And so I think it's really important to kind of trace the dollars and kind of have a better understanding of, why people have the stance that they do and what influence they're trying to have. And so I think the same is true for the teachers union. And I think it's important for parents to be more educated around, particular agendas and what the teachers union stands for. And it's not every teacher by any means, but there is a majority there that's at play. And so it's important for parents to be informed on what that majority is trying to push and what their values are and the influence that they're trying to have outside of just the educational sector, but in the political sphere and in other spheres as well.
Okay, we have about 30 seconds to wrap up. Can you somehow summarize the two topics? Because it seems like there's almost two issues. One is the microfinance issue, and then the other is the homeschooling.
Yeah, so, I think that, again, one of the most impactful ways to help kids is by empowering the parents. And I think that applies both to the developing world with crisis-center microfinance and also here in the situation that we're facing with public education. And so when parents get involved and when they take a stand, when they are empowered, when they're given the reins on education or when they're given the reins on creating a business opportunity for themselves, they are able to create the best circumstance for their kids to thrive. And as I said, the same is true in the most poor areas of the world, and it's true in the living room in the United States where, kids are trying to figure out how to successfully learn. And
all
so
right.
When you empower the parents, kids win.
Okay, 483.fund for more information. Thank you so much, Jen, for being with us. All the best.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye-bye.